Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Let's imagine we have a time machine. And with this time machine, we move someone, some technically skilled person, a craftsman, or maybe even like an engineer today. A person like this, we move this person from the year zero to the year 1000. This person would get out of the time machine, maybe be a bit confused, but as far as technology is concerned, this person would get around pretty well pretty soon. Most of the things are known to him. Some things have been optimized and some things are new, but basically he knows the majority of what he sees in technology. And this is the major fact. You can see how technology is working. There is a mill that is milling wheat. There is there's a pump, a water pump that pumps up the water. There are ropes you can use to pull up sails. So you can watch technology work. If we do the same exercise again and move someone from the year 1,000 years ahead into today's world, this person will be totally confused. First of all, the number of technological devices that we have. We have them everywhere. I'm sitting here in front of my MacBook with my microphone and my screen, and I have my smartphone standing here. I have basically everything around me is somehow connected to technology. That's the first point. And the second and more important point is that the furthest end of technology, the highest end of high tech, has withdrawn himself, has moved into little boxes. So we have these boxes of maybe metal or plastic, and then there may be a piece of glass on top of it. And then inside these boxes, you have PCBs. These are little boards, and there are chips on it. These little devices look a little like little small bugs. And those are the wide devices where we talk a lot about. There's a shortage in chips. There's a shortage due to broken production and supply lines that we have, and that we have a lack of these devices in the technological production world. And in these chips there are slices of silicon, and on these slices of silicons there are zeros and ones that are pushed around. This is high tech, and none of us with his or her natural senses can see this, can understand this, can understand what is going on in there. Of course, we can take a microscope, and then we can ask physicists, we can ask electronic experts, hardware, software guys. They all can explain us somehow what's going on in there, but we cannot see it. We cannot feel it with our natural senses, and that's the biggest point in if we see into how technology has changed. And I tell the story with a time machine. The story with a time machine. Every now and then in my keynotes, and somebody after a keynote came to me and said, "Hey, it's not 1,000 years. Just go back 100 years. If you move somebody from early 20th century to today, this person would also be totally confused, because
we have this hockey stick kind of development in technology, and that we're right in the beginning of this really steep phase that goes up radically with the number of devices we have, with the functions devices have, with the complexity of devices. Everything is growing exponentially. And if you look back into the past, the question is, when did it start? And I know that this is somehow kind of a Eurocentric, Western-centric point of view, but there was a guy called Gutenberg, Johann Gutenberg, a German guy who invented book printing. In China, it happened a couple of years earlier, but he was in the middle of the 15th century. He invented it. Up to then, the only way of copying books was usually monks, usually in monasteries, sitting there and copying these books by hand. And usually book means Bible. So the Bible was copied by hand. And so written knowledge, books, was extremely seldom at the time. It was very exclusive knowledge at that time. And only a few people could read and write. And even less people had access to books at all, even though they could read and write. And that suddenly changed when book printing was invented. And once you have set up a book with these letters, it takes a lot of time to do this. But once you did this, then you were able to make more or less unlimited copies out of that. You can make 100 copies, 1,000 copies, 5,000 copies once you have done it. And Gutenberg invented not only the book printing itself, but also the right paper and the right ink, which supports my thesis that most of the technology we know works in ecosystems only. It's something that where we need consider that it's not a single technology, but it is a combination of technology. Imagine a smartphone without a Wi-Fi or mobile network or without an app store. It just wouldn't work. And it's the same here. Just the book printing is, or book printing is just part of it. And the ink and the paper was also very important to have this. And that was the start. Knowledge became available easily. Books have still been pretty exclusive, but not as exclusive as they'd been before. And it was easy to distribute knowledge. And so people were able to learn from books other people wrote. And that then led to the explosion of ideas in arts, in music, in technology, in architecture during the Renaissance. That was maybe 100 years later. We had the Renaissance. And Michelangelo, for example, or Leonardo da Vinci were both guys at that time, and they benefited from the book printing that had been invented 100 years before. Then we moved on. We removed the divine part of out of science and out of physics as we see it. And that then led to the first Industrial Revolution. The Industrial Revolution started in the late 18th century in England by developing the steam engine. And the steam engine replaced human work with mechanical work. And then another about 100 years later, in the late 19th century, the second Industrial Revolution came up, when suddenly phone calls were possible, that wired data, wired voice transfer over large distances was allowed. That eased up communication, clearly. Before that, you had to write a letter and somebody had to carry that letter to the guy you wanted to read, or the person you wanted to read. And then somebody had to write a letter again to write it back. And that was the comparably slow communication. And so suddenly with a telephone or the wired data transfer they had before, that that changed it, that made it much faster. Electricity came up, and then work was reorganized. So a guy called Gilbreth and another guy called Taylor, they analyzed work, they cut it into small pieces, and then put these pieces, advice to people to work only on these small pieces of work. And then this led to the production lines. Henry Ford was the one introducing that in the early 19th century. And yeah, that was the point then. And then in the late 1960s, the microprocessors came up, and then computing, robots came out. 2007, we had the smartphone. 2022, we had ChatGPT coming out, creating awareness of artificial intelligence. As you can see, the times get shorter and shorter, and the idea of the number of functionalities and the presence of technology is constantly growing. And the growth of the growth is growing, and the growth of the growth of the growth is also growing. So we have this exponential growth that will lead to some kind of world, and in shorter and shorter time frames will change your world dramatically. And this is when, and this is what I'm going to talk about in this podcast episode, is what is called trends. And I love to think in trends because it makes it easier to, let's say, foresee the next steps. And there's a couple of gaps in these trends. Some things that where trends are not useful, situations where they're not useful, and many trends have been proven wrong over time. But at the end of the day, there are these trends, and they're not independent from each other. And I made the decision to run quickly through 10 of the most important trends that I see that are active at the moment, that are relevant at the moment, and that change the world we are living in. So trend number one, artificial intelligence, of course. That is the one trend that dominates everything at the moment. And artificial intelligence allows machines of whatever kind to act in a certain way humankind, human-like, act human-like by analyzing data, analyzing patterns, and improving themselves by learning. Machine learning is a part of artificial intelligence. It improves itself continuously through experiences. And artificial intelligence has a couple of chances, a couple of opportunities behind this. It's raising efficiency. We can automate repeating tasks that we have. It allows us to do things faster we could have done by ourselves, but yeah, it's just simply faster. So if I write an email, and you will know this, that I'm not a native English speaker, and that when I write an English email, I find this is not very well formulated, this is maybe not the kind of email I want to send out, I put it into ChatGPT and say, hey, make a serious email out of this, and it returns a text. And I could have done it by myself, of course, by reworking it. But within a couple of seconds, I get an answer from an artificial intelligence that raises my efficiency. Personalization, or as I have heard it in the past months, a couple of times, hyper-personalization. Yeah, so you can design services, you can design human-machine interfaces, HMIs, according to personal preferences, to past behavior, to contexts people are in. And particularly these personalized HMI, artificial intelligence-based HMIs, these adaptions based on artificial intelligence and human-machine interfaces, that is a thing that I find extremely fascinating. How much sense does it make? Is it good or is it bad? And what are the parameters we need to input, and what are the parameters we can change in an HMI without totally confusing a user? These are the big questions. But artificial intelligence allows to personalize everything that is somehow digital. And it's innovative. You can use AI for innovations like finding new business models, And allows you to create new business models based on AI. The algorithms are more or less available, not really for free, but it's a lot of that is open source. You can have it. You have to teach it, and you have to integrate it. And the major thing, the major chance you have is create a new business model, create a new software, a new service based on artificial intelligence. The risks of AI are very often discussed as well. The major thing here is bias and discrimination. If you feed stupid things into an AI algorithm, it will have stupid things as an output. So it's bullshit in, bullshit out that you have. You have biased, you have distorted data, and maybe that leads to the wrong decisions or at least unfair decisions. The AI algorithms tend to be racist, tend to be white, cis, man-friendly in a way, because they're taught that this is the majority of people, they're the majority of, which is totally wrong as we know it. But if you teach an AI algorithm something, it will repeat it, it will improve it, it will amplify it, but make it even stronger. And that is the big, big disadvantage of artificial intelligence. The second one is transparency. Artificial intelligence algorithms are not transparent to us. And if you get a result out of an AI algorithm, it is absolutely clear. Well, it's not clear. It's absolutely clear that you don't know anything, or it's clear that you don't know ever anything about this. Why? What data has been used? What transformation was done on the data? How was a decision being made based on what assumptions? Yeah, so there is a very low transparency in artificial intelligence. And it will change our working life, particularly jobs that have been pretty safe in the past, like programmers, like electronics developers, technical people doing standardized jobs. They get under pressure because that is something AI can do. So if you type something into ChatGPT and you want to have a C++ code over this, out of this, you get a code out of this. Yeah, and so with the growth and the efficiency, and we talked about this 2 minutes ago, maybe one developer is able to do the job of 10 developers. So 9 of them have to fear their jobs. While other jobs that are usually under pressure, they are not met somewhat by artificial intelligence, like caring jobs, like nurses. We need this human-to-human services because this is something an AI cannot do or not do on an appropriate level. All right, second point, second big trend, Internet of Things. So the IoT connects any kind of physical device through the internet to collect data, to set up new processes, to automate. One example is a smart home. So you have a smart home fully connected, everything talks to everything. And from a central device, you can advise your shades to go down when it gets dark. You can advise your bathroom to set up a nice bath for you. You can dim the lights, and you can even do this from your car while you're traveling home and saying, hey, I'll be home in 15 minutes. Please do this and that. And by the way, check if there is something left in the fridge or if I need to buy some grocery before I come home. Same goes for industrial applications, that machines check other machines, that machines control themselves. For example, a machine detects that some kind of material it needs to perform its job is running out, and then it sends out an order email to some other machine that produces that material, and then puts the material onto one specific machine, maybe a drone or an autonomous car, and drives that from one machine to the other so you have this fully connected world, fully connected industrial world, which is can be called Internet of Things or Industrial Internet if you're more on the professional side. The chances out of this raise of efficiency. We can optimize production processes. We can optimize the use of resources. We can base decisions on data. So since the Internet of Things is constantly producing data on any aspect of this, then if we add maybe an AI algorithm or a data analytics algorithm, then we get real-time analysis of things that are going on maybe on some totally different place on the globe, and we can manage that better and easy for more efficiency, for more production output, for less use of resources. And so, yeah, and we can have a new business model. So from my point of view, with the IoT, it'd be at the very, very beginning of business models that we have. One example is predictive maintenance in cars. So if you have a car that is fully equipped with sensors, and maybe there is a big data algorithm, analysis algorithm added, maybe even some artificial intelligence, then you know the brake is making a couple of strange new noises. So probably the brake pads will be down in 1,000 miles. And then you can order new brake pads. So the car can order new brake pads and let them send to your garage. And then you get an appointment at your garage and you can drive there and get your brake pads before they are really down and make more damage because they are down. That is typical business models based on the IoT. Risks of the IoT, first of all, data protection, data security. Whenever a device is connected to the internet, it is endangered. And we can make it very difficult for attackers, for hackers to get into our devices. But from my point of view, it will never be impossible. It can be very, 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 very difficult and very, 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 very improbable. But it is not 100% security and data safety we have there. And this may lead to the misuse of personal data, stealing identities on the internet. All this is happening today. And the more devices you have connected to the internet, the more chances hackers have to get in. And this is one thing that we still have enormous amounts of different data formats, of different standards. Once we are on the level of the internet protocol, then everything is good. Then we have a standard for the exchange. But before that, we have totally different standards of data storage, data collection, of data formats that we have. And if you have edge computing, if you have to make very fast decisions in safety critical situations, then maybe going down to the internet protocol, running things through the internet makes it very, very unreliable. Yeah? And if you stay beyond internet protocol, then it is difficult to integrate these different standards without losing the advantages that you have. Trend number three, 5G technology. So you have, this is a mobile data transfer technology. You have this in your smartphone probably, and you can use that if you have a 5G coverage. Higher bandwidth and lower latency in the data transfer than other mobile data transfer standards. And this allows then real-time applications. If you have cars talking to each other, with 5G, you know that the other car will know within so and so many milliseconds that I have sent this data. If you cannot rely on this one, you cannot build services and safety related services on top of that. You need to have the safety and you need to have the reliability of 5G technology compared to 4G or even 3G, where you never know how long it takes to transfer pieces of data from one device to the other. You can use this, I already mentioned this, in an autonomous driving. Yeah, the real-time communication between cars so that the car sends a message, hey, I will brake here or there's a traffic jam there, and that all the other cars know, okay, I have to do something now. Like telematics, telemedicine. That you have a professional doctor sitting somewhere in location A and that the patient is in location B, maybe thousands of miles away, and that you can have surgeries, life surgeries, through the internet or through the wireless data nets work. And again, you need the 5G technology to transfer the data in real time. Industry 4.0, industrial internet, the same for as I just discussed it with steering machines, controlling machines, network machines without any latencies. The risk on 5G technology, it's pretty expensive, and we have to rebuild our entire mobile data network. There are safety problems connected to this one. So 5G equipment allows the producers to leave back doors open for cyber attacks. And there is regulation in Germany and in the USA that certain parts of 5G networks shall not be from China, because that may allow Chinese authorities to break into our data networks. And then there is an acceptance problem in 5G. Some are skeptical due to possible health risks. My very personal opinion, it's not scientifically based, but this is just something I have seen over the past 30, 35 years. Whenever a new technology comes up, somebody pops up and says, hey, this is dangerous for the health. And studies have been made on all these different possible threats for our health, and hardly any of them has shown that there is a scientific proof for that. So yes, it might be that 5G technology carries a certain health risk, but I haven't seen any serious scientific health study proving that on large scale. Trend number four, quantum computing. Quantum computing use qubits instead of bits, 0-1 bits, and you have qubits that have more statuses to make extremely fast calculations. Particularly if you have very complex systems that you want to optimize in finance, for example, in mathematics. That's where these machines are extremely good in. I don't believe that some of us will have a quantum computer on their desks or in their home in the next years. These machines are really for professionals, mathematicians, finance professionals, insurance professionals, to predict things. Weather forecasts can be better with quantum computing. This is the area where they will be introduced first. And maybe in 20, 50 years from now, we will have them at home. But at the moment, they're very complex. They are complex to handle. They need a sophisticated cooling system. So I don't see this in private homes. What can we do with this? Cryptographics. We can have faster research, faster simulations, for example, in medical areas, on chemistry and physics and mathematics. And we can optimize, for example, in logistics and power supplies, power distribution and networks. Whenever it gets really, really complex, then quantum computers can be very beneficial. They're expensive, I said this, high development costs, higher affordances for the infrastructure. And they're super complex, hard to handle. You need professional staff today to run them. And this is a problem you have. Trend number five, blockchain technology. So blockchain is a decentralized and transparent register for transactions and data. And we know blockchain from cryptocurrencies, and that is a typical example of that. So the blockchain, what it is doing, it's recording any changes. For example, if you pay, if you buy something with a Bitcoin, then this activity is recorded and you cannot change this afterwards. This is the big, big secret or the big, big advantage of blockchain technology. It cannot be changed. And I discussed it with a client a few weeks ago, whether we can store personal profiles, personal data in the blockchain, and then if you get a new car, or if you switch from your private car to a rental car, that you can then, through the blockchain, get your personal data into the car that you want to drive, so that it becomes your car, just like my personal radio stations, my air conditioned settings, my music that is playing, and all these things will then be possible. Sorry. The big chances, the big advantage of blockchain is it has a lot of trust, and it gains a lot of trust, and people trust in this one, and you can trust in this because it's transparent. There is no central controlling instance in the blockchain, and it is not changeable. It's very efficient. You can be very smart in this one, and you have a high level of security because you cannot change the data structure. Disadvantage is enormous amounts of energy go into these things, particularly if we talk about the mining of crypto coins. That's eating up a lot of energy. There is no regulation of this one, so there is a lot of strange things going on in the blockchain world. And once it gets bigger and larger and more complex, the transaction speed goes down, so we have very slow transactions sometimes, and with that it makes it somehow a little bit unpredictable. Trend number 6, expanded reality or augmented reality and virtual reality. We all have seen these glasses, we have all seen Apple's Vision Pro. AR adds digital information to the natural world. So you are standing on a street and you wear some augmented reality glasses, and in this glass it says, all right, this is the Eiffel Tower in Paris. It was built in that year by a guy called Gustav Eiffel, and so on and so on and so on. So this is augmented reality, while virtual reality is fully virtual. It's not anyhow connected to our real environments. And you can immerse then into games and into work. You can do common construction work with other people that are somewhere on the other end of the world. And you can work on something together, maybe 3D data exchange. All this is possible in that. And this is how I see it. There have been a couple of tries to establish augmented reality. And it has not yet really worked out. Google Glasses has not really worked out. And I believe that the private applications, they are priority two. The top priority in both augmented reality and virtual reality is professional applications. A friend of mine is working for a truck company, and he's repairing trucks out there on highways. So if a truck breaks down on a highway, he travels there and he repairs it on the highway. And he says, the variety of trucks I have to repair is so big and the changes are so fast. If I had an augmented reality glass, just put it on and then it tells me, all right, this is where you can open the engine compartment. This is where you find the oil. This is where you find this and this and that. That was an application. And this is how I see augmented reality, where I see the business models and the chances of augmented reality. Chances, as I said, remote work, remote trainings, virtual products, virtual work that you do, interactive work on different computer, different levels, and different communications. The risks are there is a limited acceptance. First of all, it's probably due to the high cost, and then you have these bulky and heavy glasses you have to wear, and so there is a limited use of that. Motion sickness may appear, maybe put stress and strain onto your eyes. And as with everything that's connected with the internet, maybe sensitive data is misused. Trend number 7 in technology, sustainability. We have to reduce our ecological footprints in almost everything that we do. Yeah, the big problem is that there's a lot of greenwashing going on, that it takes a long time to implement these technologies. It's super expensive. But it is a trend, and it will not go away. Trend number 8, biotechnology, gene technology, genomic technology, changing life, changing natural life by making precise genetical changes to them has many, many advantages. And medical application, you can have personalized therapies, you can be very preventive, very foreseeing in this. So if you know that this person has a genetical chance of getting this or that cancer, you can act very, very early, and you can make very personalized therapies for this. You can create, and this goes together with the sustainability, you can create resistant plants. So we will have the climate change, and we will have more and more extreme dry times and extreme wet times in our weathers, and it will change. And we need to create plants that give us food, that feed us, but that can resist these harsh environmental changes we will face in the next 50 to 100 years. And we have to think about this. How can they be? This then is also a problem that we have. Is it okay to eat these things? Does it have any side effects we do not see at the moment? Yeah. Then biotechnology always has ethical problems. So are we allowed to change the genome of humans, to manipulate that? If we do that, is this only for the rich, or can we somehow expand this to the majority of humanity? And one thing that's also connected with biotechnology is the creation of biological weapons. Trend number 9, autonomous cars, autonomous vehicles. Cars driving around on the streets without a human. Definitely the advantage. We have a shortage of drivers globally, so we can replace them with a computer. Once autonomous cars are fully developed, they have the potential of making less mistakes than humans, so it will be safer. There is the potential that autonomous cars will be safer. It's not yet realized, but it can be safer than a human. We can optimize traffic flows, and we can provide mobility to humans with limitations. So my youngest is mentally handicapped, and he cannot travel by public transport alone, not to talk about driving a car. But with an autonomous car, he maybe would be able to get more mobility. So we have the inclusion effect here. The risks, safety. We had the cyber attacks that you can have, that your entire system, your entire car totally runs crazy. We do not have a full clarification on the legal side. Who is responsible for what? If an autonomous car has an accident, from our point of view, solvable, but needs to be done. And finally, we have reached trend number 10, cybersecurity, technologies and strategies to protect ourselves from cyber attacks, data losses, loss of identity, stolen identities. We need this to create trust, to comply, and to fulfill compliance. There are laws about cybersecurity, and we need to detect cyber attacks early, particularly because we are living in unsafe times, we are living in volatile times, we are living in from crisis to crisis, and this will not be nicer in the next years. So we have to learn, and we have to establish technologies and procedures and personal behavior that gives us cyber security. All right, so that's it for today. A quick run through. I know that was a bit of a quick run through, these 10 trends that I have mentioned to describe them. I think every of these trends should be an own episode, and I will pick out a few of them and make an episode. So the trends I was talking about was artificial intelligence, number two, Internet of Things, 5G technology, quantum computing, blockchain, augmented reality and virtual reality, sustainability, biotechnology, autonomous cars, and finally, cyber security.
That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time. Take care and stay healthy.